Welcome to the Crystal Pain Show, where we help you embrace your life right where you are and give you practical steps to get where you want to go. Whether you are in your car, folding laundry, cooking, cleaning, or maybe even just enjoying a cup of coffee and a few minutes of quiet, we're so glad you're joining us today. Here's your host, wife, mom of six kids, foster mom, entrepreneur, and author, Crystal Pain.
Welcome to another episode of the Crystal Pain Show. Y'all, I have been eagerly anticipating this episode because the person sitting across from me who is going to do the interview today is someone who has deeply, deeply impacted my life. Her book that she wrote in 2017 is one that I think of almost every single day. It's one that I am constantly telling other people they need to go read, telling other people how much it has changed my life. And I am so thrilled because she has a new book that piggybacks off of that book. And I feel like it just kind of ties this bow on the book. And we're going to talk about both books today. Dr. Sondra Dalton Smith, thank you so much for being in studio today.
It is my pleasure to join you.
Okay, so we have to back up and talk a little bit about Sacred Rest is the book that I was talking about in 2017. I'd love for you to just give a high level of what that book is, because now that I've intrigued everyone.
It's about understanding why we're tired. And so for myself, I burned out early on in my medical career, got to a place where I needed some answers and traditional medicine wasn't providing that for me. So I started researching, since that's my background, and came up with seven types of rest, a framework that I use to identify the rest deficit, and then start looking at what restorative practices will pour back into the place of deficit. So that's what that book's about, diving deep into those seven.
And I think one of the biggest things about that book is that it really turns the perspective of rest being just sleeping or taking it easy, that rest can happen in so many different formats. And it's going to look different for every single person. But one of the things, the big takeaways for me from the book was that I need social rest. And I never thought of social rest. Like, you don't think of those two things. It kind of feels like an oxymoron. But yet, when I am around life-giving people, that brings rest to my soul. And so y'all just have to read the book. And you also have a quiz that they can take. Tell us about the quiz.
Yeah. So the quiz is at restquiz.com. Most of the time when people hear about the seven types of rest, the physical, mental, spiritual, emotional, social, sensory, and creative, they want to know, well, what's my rest deficit? So they can go to restquiz.com. They get a score in all seven, and then you'll be able to narrow down where to begin your rest journey.
Mm. Okay. So this next book that you wrote, you said when you wrote Sacred Rest, you cried all the way through it. Like, it was a really hard book for you to write. But then this next book has been kind of like the gift of you did the really hard thing and now you get to reap the rewards. Tell us about that.
Yeah, Sacred Rest was a hard one for me. I talked so much just about my failures in rest and was really vulnerable beyond what I was comfortable with in that book. And so it was one of those battles where I want to share the information, but I also feel like it's necessary to share some humanity in it as well, so people could see themselves in the journey. This book, I was able to do that without all the stress. Mm-hmm. A lot of the performance, a lot of the needing to show up perfect that I was battling with in Sacred Rest, I'd already pretty much gotten to the end of that and was able to just write from a place of authenticity, not try to make it look pretty, just say what was happening in my heart and how I was feeling in my journey.
I was thinking you were writing from a place of rest. I mean, honestly, like that's just like you're resting in Jesus and no longer striving of like, oh, it needs to be a certain, it's just like, no, just like the overflow of your heart. And this book is called Being Fully Known, The Joyful Satisfaction of Beholding, Becoming, and Belonging. And I was thinking how you writing this, like it's this beautiful picture of what it looks like to be fully known, that you're just resting in Jesus and like just receiving all he has for you and then sharing from that.
Yeah, that's such a great way of looking at it, because that is the journey. I'm sitting here writing the book, and the whole time I'm writing, I'm thinking, I can say what I truly believe. I can speak from a place of authenticity. I can share the highs and the lows and the emotions and all the things. and I'm not afraid. And I feel like that's the part of being fully known. You get past your own fears and insecurities, and you get to a place of just truth within yourself.
I think so many like listen to that and are like, I want that. I want to back up a little bit though, because you alluded to when you were writing Sacred Rest and you talked a little bit about like your career. And I'd love to dive into that, because that before we went, we started recording, you were talking about kind of like that shift in your identity of who you were and who you were then, who you are now. Tell us a little bit about your background.
Yeah, I'm an internal medicine physician. So I've been in clinical practice for over 20 years now. And so traditional medicine, I was in the ER, the ICU, I had an office. You know, it was one of those things where I thought, this is what I'm going to be doing the rest of my life. I love it. I love medicine. I love science. I've wanted to be a doctor since I was the age of 5. No part of me had any desire of changing. And when I burned out and started this journey with researching and discovering the types of rest, I thought, I'm going to write this book just because I feel like God is telling me to write this book. I'm going to release it and I'm going to go on about my business, continuing seeing patients. What I didn't anticipate was that all of a sudden I'd be getting invites to do TEDx talks and invites to go sit at Fortune 100 companies and share and consult with them on workplace well-being. None of that was ever in my plan. So I had to start reevaluating my identity, because my identity was wrapped up in that white coat. It's like, this is what I do. I'm not this person that they keep asking for. And I really just felt like at some point during that process, God spoke to my heart and was like, you have no clue who you are. You've allowed this to be your identity and you stopped there. You're not allowing a process of growth or transformation. You're not allowing yourself to fully be and become all you could be.
And that's what this book is really about. And you said something before we started recording that I'd love for you to repeat. You were talking about how like someone, you watched them like as they viewed God. Do you know what I'm referring to? Okay, say that, because it was so powerful.
Yes, there's a young woman that I was coaching now. It's been over 5 years ago that we were sitting down, and she was a part of my mastermind group. And I remember her, you know, we have this group of like about 30 women. She raises her little Zoom hand and she's like, God's telling me to do all this stuff and I don't know how I'm supposed to do all of that. And I remember as we were kind of going through this process, I talk about in the book, a process of abiding and action. So the abide act framework. As we walk through this process of her learning how to abide, how to behold God in all things. And really, the more we behold him, we start becoming what we behold. Mm-hmm. And I watched as she went from this really timid and quiet and fearful person to this woman now who's like hosting her own events. She's starting a TV program. She has started a magazine. She's doing all of these things. And it has just unlocked this new place of belonging. She no longer is trying to fit into the mold of, well, this is what a pastor's wife do, or this is how you do these things. She's gone through the whole beholding, becoming, and belonging process. And it's just a beautiful thing to watch.
So you're talking about how, like, as we're beholding God, like the more that we're just beholding him, like we become like him and we become what we behold. But that's beautiful. But we need some practicalities. Like, how do we actually do that in our everyday life? Tell us more about that.
Yeah. You know, for myself, I look at it like this. Whenever I am, I'll use a direct example. If I'm confronted with a new opportunity, something that I'm like, ooh, that's too big. I don't know if I can pull off whatever that is. The first thing I do is I start going and looking at different aspects of God that relate to that thing. I have some speaking engagements that are like in front of 10, 15, 20,000 people. So it's one of those things where it's like, I'm the girl who never wanted to get on anyone's stage. I didn't want to give a report in a classroom. So I'm like, okay, God, this is the opportunity in front of me. Show me your take on that. And I start looking at the Bible specifically, looking at how God shows up as a communicator. From the very creation story, he spoke and things were. And if something is illuminated to me and the word of God, I recognize that that's a part of myself I have not fully ingested. So I see you as communicating. I see you as speaking life into existence. Help me become that in this situation. Help me become the speaker who's able to speak life into a situation. When you start viewing yourself that way, you stop worrying about your insecurities and your fears. You actually start redirecting that energy someplace positive where you can then get an outcome that is actually going to bring him glory.
So anytime we are feeling overwhelmed, we're feeling like this is too big, I can't do this, you're saying that's an opportunity for us to stop and really
abide,
view the character of God. And so abide, you have this abide act. What do you call it?
Exactly? Framework.
Framework. Okay. Yes. I knew there was a word. Abide act framework. And I think it is just, I was reading that section and I was like, okay, I need her to talk more about this. So tell us how that actually, like how we walk that out in our life.
For myself, I'm the kind of person, I am high strung, like high achiever. I like metrics. I like checking things off boxes. I have lists for my list. That's just my personality. And so if I get an idea, I'm off to the races. I'm not asking anyone any questions. And the problem with that is we can get off track. You know, it's kind of like the analogy they give with the plane. If you're a couple of degrees off, you'll end up in a completely different state. Well, I feel like a lot of our lives are like that. We don't actually stop and do a check-in to see, am I still on track with what I desire? Am I still on track with my purpose, with my goals, with the things that are priorities for me? And so this Abide Act framework is a system. It's based around 10 weeks, 2 weeks of abiding, basically stopping and reflecting, checking out where you're at and if it's where you want to be, and then 8 weeks of action, where you act off of what you learn during that abide period. So over a 52-week year, you have 5 abide act cycles, and then 2 bonus weeks to have a sabbatical or whatever else you need to do, or do extra work if that's what you need to do. But it builds in a cyclic nature to accomplishment so that we're not always pushing, because that's what burns us out. Visionaries will push themselves to exhaustion, and then they can't find vision anymore.
So when I was reading that section, I was thinking, okay, 2 weeks of abiding, someone like me who's a doer, I'm like, how do we actually do that? Because I do have to get some things done too. So what does that look like? Because obviously it's not just like you take 2 weeks off and you go to this cottage at the lake and you sit there.
Oh no, I'll give an example for myself. So let's say if I'm sitting down and I have a new nonprofit. So let me use that as an example, because that's one that I'm actively working on. So, you know, you have all the things that you have to do with that. So my 2 weeks of abiding, I'm still doing the things that I know need to be done. But rather than trying to come up with more new ideas, because usually visionaries and everyone, you're constantly thinking up new ways of doing things. So rather than putting all of my attention on moving toward any new ideas, during that 2 weeks, I am going to evaluate where I'm currently at. I'm still doing other work at the time, but I'm not pushing to check another box off. All the boxes stay in whatever activities we're currently doing to maintain things. And then we're spending that extra energy we would be using to come up with new ideas or check off new boxes to evaluate. Mm.
And what would that evaluation look like? Like it's like 30 minutes in the morning where you're just having quiet before the Lord. Like how practically does that look?
I tend to start off with a time period. Usually it's not in the morning. Mornings are not my best time for thinking and processing. For myself, usually it's toward the end of the day. So after I finish whatever work that I'm doing, I oftentimes between 4 and 5 p.m. are my times that I will actually sit and have vision time. And so I'll sit during that time and I'll ask questions. And I feel like that's the abiding part that helps me the most. It's the reason why at the end of the book, I have all these daily unveiling questions. I ask questions of myself. Is the current trajectory of this business project, whatever it is, moving in the direction I want to go? I might sit with that one day. During the two-week period. The next day, I might go through something specifically along the lines of, am I still getting satisfaction in what's being produced? And if not, what's the next step after that? If I'm not satisfied with what I'm producing, I'm just producing out of habit or routine, how now do I need to adjust or pivot? Because many, you know, I work with a lot of women who are in businesses. A lot of people are changing their businesses rather than evaluating what iterations need to be made. Mm. Because all the changing just keeps you jumping with no process, no progress. But if you're able to stop and say, what's working, what's not working, and you don't feel the pressure to go jump and do it right then, but you have a moment just to breathe on it and look and see, okay, I think this not working, what could work in place of this? And then maybe part of the abiding is researching and questioning and kind of asking God for some clarity and some guidance, even in the process of, from what I see, this is the change I think I want to make. How would that affect the overall process? How do I think that'll affect my emotions? How does that affect my business growth, my family? Taking time just to actually work through some of the details before we just jump right into action.
And so you do that. And then are you, I know in the book, you have a plan for like what the next 10 weeks would look like. And so what is 10 weeks or 8 weeks? Now all of a sudden I'm like,
it's
8 weeks. So 10 weeks. So 2 weeks of abide, 8 weeks of action. So in the book, you have the 8 weeks kind of like, here's how you could break down the action. So then do you plan that out during the abiding time? Sorry, I'm getting real nitty gritty, but as I was reading it, these are the things that were going in my head. So
I do, but I do loosely. I find for myself, I like freedom. Okay. And so I plan it out loosely. So for example, one of the things we're working on with that nonprofit is we're looking through the curriculum. And so the first 2 weeks was sitting down and kind of thinking, what do I want women to get out of it at the end of it? How do I want to fund it? What do I want them to invest? What do I want them to get from it? Going through all these details. And so the next 8 weeks, I picked one thing that I'm going to go deeper into. So I have all these ideas, but now we're going to set up the website. And so over those 8 weeks, I have planned the copy for the website. What graphics do I want? What colors do I want? And I'm working through it with an intention that at the end of this, I have what I need to hand to someone to do the website. And so it's systematically kind of going through the building blocks of the actions without just kind of having my mind completely jumbled with all of this stuff that I have to do.
The other thing I was thinking is that if you're stopping after 8 weeks and you have two more weeks of abiding, it really helps you to be smart about pacing yourself. So you're not just taking way more on than you can actually do. And it's kind of like, what can I do in 8 weeks? Because I think sometimes we're like, I'm just going to do all the things, but this will really help you to not only make sure that you're, you know, looking at Jesus and abiding in him, but also just not biting off more than you can chew.
Yeah, because I think oftentimes we don't actually take into account our capacity. You know, if as a mom, now my kids are in college, but when they were at home, if part of my abide is that, oh, I'm going to sit down and record all these podcast interviews, and I got soccer and baseball and basketball and all these things, it lets me actually be realistic. How much time do I actually have to do what I just put on my action list? And then be able to schedule it in so that I can make room for it, or be real with myself and say, I can't accomplish that. So let me drop this, maybe separate it out into two abide act periods. This is not going to happen in just 8 weeks. It's going to take maybe 16 weeks for that to get accomplished. And then you can continue.
Mm. And I think the stopping and reevaluating is so good, because we can just get where we're stuck in this really unhealthy, dysfunctional rut, but we're kind of on this hamster wheel, you know. But if we take the time to stop and sort of like zoom out, we can see, oh, this isn't working, or this is working. That's so good.
You know, one of the things that also, I know we're talking about like productivity related things, but some of my abide act periods, the abide has really shown me that the action is not something productivity related to my business or my work, but is actually an action for my mindset, an action for just my own personal health and healing and well-being. You know, one abide act period, it was very clear. It's like, you know what? You need to figure out how to work out and exercise again on a regular basis. And that's the priority, because you won't have the energy to go travel and do all the things you need to do. Another one was working with comparisons, because I, you know, and you know this, you're a writer and speaker and all, and what you look at other people, and sometimes you're like, wow, that's so amazing what they're doing. Let me see how I can bring it over into what I do. And that's its own level of exhaustion. And so one abide act period, that was the goal. How do I look at these people I admire and not try to emulate them, but actually identify what is it I'm admiring? because their characteristics or their way of presenting or whatever it is, those things I can learn from. I can't be them, but I can learn from them and bring that into what I do. And I think that was probably one of the most beneficial Abide Act periods I ever had, because it gave me a lot of freedom that I don't need to look like someone else as they're doing it, but I can certainly learn from them.
Mm. That's so good of when we feel that comparison coming up to stop and say, what is it that I'm actually, you know, I think so much, so often for me, it's like, it's a jealousy and it's a discontentment in what God has given me to do. But then to say, what am I really admiring in them and what can I learn from them? And if we would stop and ask that, there's a ton that we can learn from them.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
One of my real life friends was raving about this specific supplement on social media. And she talked about it so much and how it made her feel so much better. It really helped her pregnancy be so much smoother. And she's had a lot of kids. So I was like, paying attention to that. And she talked about it so highly that I was like, I need to check this out. Well, it is called DS01. It's a clinically validated 2-in-1 probiotic and prebiotic. And because of her high recommendation, I started taking it myself. It's formulated with 24 strains that support your whole body, including reducing bloating, supporting radiant skin, supporting immune health, and strengthening the gut barrier. I have noticed that since I started taking it, I feel so much more energetic. And I love that. And I also love that it's super easy to take, 2 little capsules right before I go to bed. And it's like something that I'm doing for my health, a gift that I'm giving to myself without much effort at all. Maybe one of your goals for 2025 is to prioritize your health or to work on some areas where you feel like your health is not doing so well. This would be a great thing to check out. Ready to experience a probiotic that actually works? Go to seed.com/crystal and use code 25crystal to get 25% off your first month. That's 25% off your first month of Seed's DS01 Daily Symbiotic at seed.com/crystal, code 25crystal. If you want to set your child up for success, but maybe your child is struggling in a specific subject in school, or they're needing help with their homework and you just feel like, I don't know where to turn, I don't know how to help them. Well, IXL Learning is an online learning program for kids that covers math, language arts, science, and social studies. It's designed to help kids really understand and master topics in a fun way with positive feedback. And I can tell you, Silas used IXL for his math class. He loved the real-time data that you would get. He's such a person who loves all the graphs and charts and that sort of thing, very different than me. And it really motivated him to see exactly where he was doing and how he was doing. And he actually wanted to work ahead because of the motivation that he got from IXL. This program has been proven to improve kids' grades. Backed by research, kids using IXL are scoring higher on tests. It's going to work for any of your kids. This is the cool thing. You know, every child learns differently, but IXL has used advanced algorithms to give the right help to each kid, no matter their age or personality. And I love this part. One subscription gets you everything. There's one site for all the kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. And if your child is struggling, this is such a smart investment. It'll also save you money because a single hour of tutoring costs more than a month of IXL. And I love that IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. Crystal Payne podcast show listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/today. Visit IXL.com/today to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price. I never knew that I could love a pair of jeans so much, especially a pair of jeans that was outside of the type of jeans I would usually pick for myself. Let me tell you about this. So Armoire is a site that is dedicated to helping women get dressed easily. It's a clothing rental membership, and it helps you to build a perfect wardrobe with brands that are high quality, unique, and recommended just for you. All you do is take a 5-minute style quiz and select items from your dynamic, personalized closet, and then the styles show up at your door in as little as 2 days. Then when you're ready for new clothes, you just swap them out for more new to you styles. Well, I did this. I took the style quiz and they picked out this pair of jeans that was very different than a pair of jeans I would pick out for myself. But I was like, you know what? I love that this is going to challenge me to step outside my comfort zone. So I'm going to try this. And I ordered them and I fell in love. So much so that I wore these jeans multiple times every single week, did not want to send them back. And I ended up buying them because I loved them so much. And that's one of the things that I love about Armoire. It helps you to define your personal style, to try things that are different than you usually would, because you don't have to feel like, well, if I don't like this, then I spent the money on it and it's going to sit in my closet and that's going to be wasteful. You can just send it back if you decide you don't like it and swap it out for something else. Another great thing is that if you are pregnant or you're on a fitness journey, Armoire can help you be able to not have to go out and keep getting a lot of new clothes. It can save you money because you can just order clothes at whatever size you are at. And then if that size changes, you can just send them in and swap them out for a different size. Right now, my listeners can give Armoire a try and get up to 50% off their first month. That's $125 off. Just visit armoire.style/crystal. That's armoire.style, armoire.style/crystal. To get up to 50% off your first month and never worry about what to wear again. Try Armoire today.
Okay, so you alluded to the fact that you are this, you know, in this career and you, like, this is your identity. This is who you are. And then in the book, you talk about how one day that all changed. Like, God told you something and it was not what you were expecting.
It was definitely not what I was expecting. You know, it's so interesting that now looking back on it, I can laugh at it. It was not a laughing matter when it happened. It was quite shocking. But I just remember one day hearing that this season's over, specifically as it related to traditional medicine, working in the hospital and all of that. And I recall just thinking, there is no way, you know, that has to be the enemy, because God would never tell me to give up my job. I mean, I got kids, I got bills. That's not logical. But it didn't go away. I mean, I did 3 years of disobedience. I'm like, there is no way. This does not make logical sense. And I remember being at a conference, actually, She Speaks conference, actually, many years ago, as a writer's speaker conference. And I was there to speak, and I was sitting there having a conversation with another speaker, and she goes, what's God doing in your life? And I was like, oh, he's asking me to give up medicine, but I'm not doing that. And I just kind of went on with the conversation. And I remember her kind of turning and looking at me like I had four heads. She's like, did you just hear what you said? And I think it was the first time it dawned on me, I'm willingly disobeying. It's like, I just don't like what he said, so I'm just not going to do that. And it broke my heart, because it wasn't that I was intentionally trying to not do it. It just didn't make sense to me. And so within a 6-month period, I pretty much dissolved my medical practice and was jobless, trying to figure out, okay, what are we doing next, God? And that is when everything just blew up with the book Sacred Rest. I mean, it was like, looking back on it now, had I not had the space to be able to travel and do the things I got to do, I would have never been able to do them with a hospital and patient load and all the different things. It just would not have been possible. But that journey was part of that process of being fully known for me. Mm-hmm. I could not see myself doing what I believe he said. However, that is what I'm doing now.
Mm-hmm. You talk in the book, you talked about, you must get comfortable with living out of the fullness of your identity, and how you said that being fully known will push you past the labels, those that are self-imposed and ones you've picked up along the way from others. You will have to surrender preconceived notions about yourself. You will have to be willing to transform how you articulate who you are. And, you know, you said most of us have only begun to scratch the surface of what God has deposited within us. And I think, I wonder how many of us are standing in disobedience because the thing that God's called us to doesn't make sense. It feels really scary. It feels like that is going to push me so far outside of my comfort zone that I'm just going to stay here where it's safe. And yet we're missing out on so much. Like, had you not taken that huge step of faith, I feel like you wouldn't be able to step into all that God has called you to, but you did, even though it took you 3 years. And I think it's almost like, you know, you look back and those 3 years, you can see how like God used that too, because you were able to then, once you finally made the decision, he's like, I've just been waiting for you to step into this. I've got so much more for you.
Yeah. You know what? I always, when I think about those 3 years, a part of me is like, wow, if I had only, you know, jumped into obedience a lot sooner. But I've gotten to a place where I realize I think I needed that time of kind of circling the mountain just to deal with me, because there was so much fear, so much insecurity. I grew up kind of with abandonment issues and all of the traumas. That's why I start the book off talking about those things, because all of those things come with you. Even when you feel like you're healed from your traumas and your childhood things that happen, they all come with you. You don't separate from them. They just, you learn how to manage them. You get levels of healing within them, but all of that comes with you. And I think I needed to allow all of that to come out. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't doing that. I felt like if I'm healed from the trauma, I should never talk about it again because I'm healed from it. And what I'm realizing is in being fully known, I have to let all of me come out. You know, on the cover, we have an olive. Simply because that's my reminder that an olive, to get the fullest flavor of the oil, the entire olive has to be pressed. The skin, the meat, the pit, every part of it goes into the process. And for me to actually give the fullest expression of who I am and the fullest expression of my portion to share God's heart in heaven, all of me has to come into the process.
Mm. Near the end of the book, you talk about the sacred rest and sacred work. And I thought this was really, really powerful. You were talking about sacred work occurs in the present because this is where the Holy Spirit dwells. It is doing the inspired assignment that is before you. The assignment is very personal to each of this. Our inspiration arises from our past experiences, joys, hurts, loves, losses, and successes. You are the only one who can do the sacred work you are called to do. And you were talking about it doesn't seek attention, promotion, recognition. It flows from the heart of God. And there was just so much hope that was infused in me when I was reading this. And I just thought, I love how you kind of saved this for the end, you know, but it's that beholding and looking to the Lord, abiding in him, and then letting him change our heart. Like he changed you in those 3 years, you know, like he was really changing your heart in those 3 years. And then now for you to be stepping into this sacred work that God's called you to, like, how does that feel?
Feels like freedom. That's the only way I can describe it. And, you know, and when I was going through that 3 year period, and specifically as I was coming out of it, I had a mentor who I could be very real with. I could have emotional rest with and just say it like it is. And I remember one day asking him, I was like, what are people going to think if I'm, you know, standing on stage talking about Jesus, you know, and I'm a doctor, what are people going to think? And I remember him just so calmly looking at me and saying, are you asking me what are people going to think when they see you living free?
Mm.
And when I tell you, that did something to me, because I had never thought about it like that. And the reality is very few people are living free. And there's levels of freedom. You know, you don't arrive. That's what I love about it. You know, I love about life is that you don't arrive, but you get to elevate as you go. So you're going around, but you get to go higher and higher. You get to go from glory to glory, so to speak. So I love that for most of us, if we take a moment to really evaluate what keeps us from stepping out, it's the fear of freedom. It feels unsafe. It feels risky. But isn't that really living?
Mm. The fear of freedom. That is powerful. So tell me why do people fear freedom?
It feels unstable. I think we are toxically addicted to stability. And what we feel like is security. And unfortunately, control, a lot of us, self included, have a bit of a control freak inside of us who wants to always feel like we know what's happening next. I can't tell you how many people I've sat down to coach and they're like, I need clarity. I need to know all the next steps and that way I can get it perfect. Can we fail with grace? And is it really a failure if you learn something in the process? I think sometimes we have to realize that obedience was the purpose. It wasn't that you had a specific metric that you checked off. It's that you conquered you. You conquered your fears, your insecurities, your doubts, all of those things that keep us from actually taking a step into the unknown, because this tension of becoming lives in the unknown. And that is the place that actually propels us into a sense of personal freedom and liberty. It propels us into being able to be authentic and transparent and really out of the box. It moves us really into what I call true belonging, where you're not just trying to look like everybody else and fit in, but you actually are okay with uniquely fitting a spot, completing the picture, not just looking like the rest of the page, but bringing a level of completion to the picture, something that was missing, filling the vacuum that was there.
And I was thinking, like, that fear of freedom, I think, because it requires you to lean so heavily on the Lord, because you can't do it in your own strength. Like, when you get to those places where God's called you to step out and you know it's something that feels impossible or feels overwhelming or it feels too much or it feels like you're not the person and he should have picked somebody else.
That's when you get to behold.
That's when you really get to lean on the Holy Spirit. And you get to see God show up in faithfulness. And then you get to know this wasn't you. Like, this was Christ in you. And I love, you know, it's like Christ in you, the hope of glory, and how we get to then be a picture, like little pictures of Jesus in this world, like little conduits of Jesus pointing other people to then go and behold him, because we're like, this isn't about me. This isn't me. This is Christ in me. And that is a really powerful place to be. It's also really scary because you don't have your little plan all worked out. You don't know what the future is going to hold, but you're like, I can trust him for today because I know he'll be faithful today.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think that we don't give beholding the benefit that and the honor that it deserves, because, you know, the Bible tells us when we are beholding him, it's like looking into a mirror. We are a reflection of him on the earth. And so when we're looking at him, it gives us an opportunity to see him, but we're also seeing ourselves. And so whenever I see something in God's character or in Jesus, and I'm like, oh, I could never be that, I usually realize now that that's an invitation. That's an invitation into a level of becoming. Not becoming more of something, but becoming more aware of him, that exact same characteristic inside of myself. You know, I'm very introverted. People are like, you're introverted, you're standing on all these stages. I am very introverted. I have a very kind of quiet, you know, you wouldn't look at me and be like, oh, you know, that's someone I should know or anything like that. That's just not my personality. And it's really interesting to me is that as I was going through one of my Abide Act periods, I was reading about Jesus and how he's called the lion and the lamb. And I was like, how can you be both? It's like complete odds to each other. You know, one's meek and quiet and humble, and the other one's like roaring and like dominating and all these things. And I remember it in kind of studying that, I just felt like Holy Spirit speak to my heart, and you are both. You've just become more accustomed to your lamb side. Let me introduce you to the lioness within. And I think often each of us has one that feels more natural. You may be an extrovert and you are a lioness day in, day out. You are strong. You're a woman who gets stuff done. You're handling business, but you haven't learned how to rest in the arms of the shepherd. And so sometimes that's the becoming, learning that aspect of it. And then others are very comfortable resting in the arms of the shepherd and actually need to learn how to roar again.
I love that. And how we're made in the image of God. And so like we are his image bearers. So anytime that we feel like, that's not me, I can't do the whatever, Christ in us, like looking at him, beholding him, and he can give us what we need to do what he's called us to do. And that he's never going to call us to something that he's not also going to be faithful to equip us. But it's a lot of times I find like it's in the moment of, you know, there's something that God's called me to do. And I'm like, I can't do this. And I'm like, Jesus, you're going to have to help me. Like, I cannot do this in my own strength. But then crying out to him, looking to him, resting in him, trusting in him. And then you look back and you're like, I could have never done that in my own strength, but look what God did. And it just gives you this excitement for life. I always say like showing up to my day, eagerly anticipating how I'm going to get to see the goodness of God in my day. When you're living in this space of really having to fully rest in him, fully trust in him, and fully rely upon him because he's called you to something that is bigger than yourself.
That's so good. There's a Hebrew word that I discuss in the book called hineni. And it's a word that came to me during one of my speaking engagements where they had it written everywhere. It was like on the little goodie bag. And I'm thinking, I don't know what that means, but I'm going to look it up when I get to the room. Because I'm thinking I should at least know what the theme is right before I get up on stage. And the event planner got up there and she was going to share with everybody what this word meant. And she shared it based off of Abraham taking Isaac up the mountain. And she talks about how when God called Abraham to that job, that he said, hineni. And I thought, okay, well, isn't that sweet? And she went on to explain that hineni actually means, God, my answer is yes before you even ask the question. Mm. And I thought to myself, there's no way. Who does that? Who would actually say yes before knowing what the question is? And what was revealed to me kind of in my own journey with that process and that word is that someone whose heart is surrendered and who trusts the person asking. So whenever I feel like I can't give God my full hineni, I have to first start with my heart. What am I not surrendering? And then second, where am I not trusting him?
That's so powerful. We're going to close with that. And I just want to encourage everyone listening, if you're listening and you're thinking, I want to get to that place. I love the framework that you've laid out in this book for beholding, becoming, and belonging, and how it's a process. And it's going to take time. And it's going to take that surrender of what we think we want our life to be or what we think our life should be. And it's that resting in the goodness of God, allowing ourselves to behold him, allowing ourselves to be fully known by him, and then to live out of that, trusting that he is going to be faithful and we belong to him and we can live out of that, just the freedom that we have in Christ and who we are in Christ.
Thank you for joining us today. For more great resources, please visit crystalpayne.com.